Today is Thursday, March 25th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. restates commitment to NATO.
You have our unshakable vow. America is fully committed to NATO, including Article 5.
Also, Kenya gives UN agency ultimatum to close two refugee camps.
Now authorities have told the UNHCR that it will take refugees to Somalia's border if camps are not closed.
Plus, pro-democracy protesters return to the streets in Myanmar. These stories and more are next. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken reaffirmed America's commitment to NATO as it sought to strengthen the transatlantic relationships in a two-day summit in Brussels that wrapped up Wednesday. As Henry Ridgewell reports, a broad agenda included the growing threat posed by China.
A new chapter in transatlantic relations. 4 years ago, then U.S. President Donald Trump called NATO obsolete. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told allies he was seeking to rebuild trust.
You have our unshakable vow. America is fully committed to NATO, including Article 5.
Blinken outlined the military threats facing the alliance.
Beijing's military ambitions are growing by the year. Coupled with the realities of modern technology, the challenges that once seemed half a world away are no longer remote. We also see this in the new military capabilities and strategies Russia has developed to challenge our alliances and undermine the rules-based order that ensures our collective security.
NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg welcomed the U.S. commitment and warned of the dangers facing the alliance.
Russia continues to deploy new and destabilizing nuclear weapons. We need agreements that cover more weapons and more nations like China.
China's rise poses a relatively new challenge for NATO, says analyst Simona Saw.
It's not about NATO moving into the Indo-Pacific, but rather being more aware and more prepared to tackle China, potential negative consequences of Chinese presence in Europe. And what this means is, of course, more awareness of foreign direct investment that could target potentially strategic technologies or critical infrastructure.
Secretary Blinken said the U.S. still expects European allies to meet defense spending targets. He said NATO must evolve to counter emerging threats, including disinformation, cyber attacks, climate change, and the coronavirus pandemic. NATO's mission in Afghanistan also featured, with U.S. troops set to withdraw by May 1st under a peace deal signed with the Taliban. Blinken said the situation is under review. Despite harmonious words, there are internal tensions in NATO. Blinken urged Turkey to drop its purchase of a Russian S-400 air defense system. Turkey said the deal is done. He also made clear U.S. opposition to the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that would bring Russian gas directly to Germany. And despite the hawkish tone against China, the European Union is finalizing a trade agreement with Beijing.
We know that our allies have complex relationships with China that won't always align perfectly. But we need to navigate these challenges together. That means working with our allies to close the gaps in areas like technology and infrastructure, where Beijing is exploiting to exert coercive pressure.
Meeting top European Union officials Wednesday, Blinken said the EU was the United States' partner of first resort. His words have been warmly welcomed, but analysts say the test of the new transatlantic relationship is yet to come as the alliance faces up to threats on multiple fronts. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
North Korea launched two ballistic missiles into the sea near Japan on Thursday, Japan's prime minister said, fueling tensions ahead of the Tokyo Olympics and ramping up pressure on the Biden administration as it finalizes its North Korea policy. Gloria Tso of Reuters reports.
Japan's leader says North Korea launched two ballistic missiles into the sea near his country on Thursday. a step up from a weekend test of shorter-range weapons, and adding new pressure onto the Biden White House. The Japanese government said one missile flew about 260 miles, pointing to a short-range missile. Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga told reporters he would bring up the launch next month in a visit to Washington.
The first launch in only less than a year represents a threat to peace and stability in Japan and the region and violates UN resolutions.
He also added he would work to ensure a safe and secure Olympics, now set for late July. UN Security Council resolutions ban North Korea from testing ballistic missiles. North Korea has not tested a nuclear weapon or its longest-range intercontinental ballistic missile since 2017, ahead of a historic meeting in Singapore between leader Kim Jong-un and former U.S. President Donald Trump in 2018. Senior U.S. officials told Reuters this week Biden officials are in the final stages of reviewing their North Korea policy. Analysts have noted a change in wording from the previous administration, emphasizing the denuclearization of North Korea rather than North and South, a more unilateral position unlikely to go down well in Pyongyang.
That's Gloria Tso of Reuters. Pro-democracy protesters returned to the streets in Myanmar on Thursday, a day after a nationwide strike that saw businesses shut and people stay at home in a silent protest against the military coup in the Southeast Asian country. Healthcare staff marched on the streets in Mandalay at dawn, carrying placards demanding for the release of Aung San Suu Kyi, the country's elected leader, who has been in detention since the coup in February. In their way, university students marched along with LGBT groups, carrying the flag of Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy and a pride flag. At least 286 people have been killed as security forces have increasingly resorted to lethal force to quell unrest. Thursday's protests came a day after a, quote, silent strike, unquote, in which people were urged to stay home and businesses to close for the day. Security forces sought to break up some protests by force, and injuries were reported among the demonstrators. Other protests proceeded peacefully, including in Mandalay, the country's second biggest city, and on the small scale in neighborhoods of Yangon, the biggest. An online news service based in eastern Myanmar reported four staff members were detained Wednesday night, including its publisher and editor. It's the junta's latest attack on press freedom. A massive fire inside a Rohingya refugee camp in Bangladesh has left at least 15 dead and nearly 50,000 homeless. VOA's Muazzin Hossein Shakli gives us an inside look in this report, narrated by Bazam Hamdad.
The fire erupted on Monday inside a Cox's Bazar refugee camp in southern Bangladesh, quickly spreading and destroying about 10,000 shanties before the blaze was contained. UN officials say at least 15 residents died and nearly 50,000 lost their homes. In a chaotic scene after the fire, thousands of Rohingyas searched for missing relatives in the ravaged Balikali refugee camp. Authorities said it was not immediately clear how the fire started, but they say it spread quickly due to strong winds and the presence of cooking gas cylinders. A committee has been formed to investigate.
We formed a seven-member inquiry committee comprising the Rohingya Repatriation Commission, police representatives, fire services, and district administration. So far, we have not received any information. They will report to us in 3 days, and then we will be able to understand what happened.
We have received various kinds of complaints about the fire. We are investigating those complaints.
On Wednesday, Bangladesh's Home Minister Asaduzzaman Khan Kamal visited the camp and assured the media that justice will be served.
Two inquiry committee reports will come to us soon. We will see if anyone is responsible for this or any negligence or sabotage has occurred. We will certainly punish according to law.
Eyewitnesses say there were multiple fires in different parts of the camp, leading some to speculate that the fire was intentionally set.
We saw a fire in Block C. It was a far away. Then I saw another fire in Block C and another in C18. So the fire was started from all sides of our camp.
How did the fire get here from far away? I do not understand it. We never thought our house would be on fire. The fire was far away, but suddenly I saw a fire burning behind us. Everything burned like this.
Rohingyas arrested several youths and handed them over to the police, who are interrogating them in connection with the fire. Nearly 500,000 Rohingyas are receiving humanitarian services in Cox's Bazar, which is a highly dense refugee camp with shanties covered in dry wood. The latest fire comes after a January blaze caused by gas cylinders that destroyed nearly 550 shanties. For Muazzam Hussein Shakil in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Kenyan authorities have given the United Nations Refugee Agency an ultimatum to come up with a plan to close two camps that are home to hundreds of thousands of refugees from neighboring Somalia. Lucy Fielder of Reuters has more.
The fire erupted on Monday inside a Cox's Bazar refugee camp in southern Bangladesh, quickly spreading and destroying about 10,000 shanties before the blaze was contained. UN officials say at least 15 residents died and nearly 50,000 lost their homes. In a chaotic scene after the fire, thousands of Rohingyas searched for missing relatives in the ravaged Balikali refugee camp. Authorities said it was not immediately clear how the fire started, but they say it spread quickly due to strong winds and the presence of cooking gas cylinders. A committee has been formed to investigate.
We formed a 7-member inquiry committee comprising the Rohingya Repatriation Commission, police representatives, fire services, and district administration. So far, we have not received any information. They will report to us in 3 days, and then we will be able to understand what happened.
We have received various kinds of complaints about the fire. We are investigating those complaints.
On Wednesday, Bangladesh's Home Minister Asaduzzaman Khan Kamal visited the camp and assured the media that justice will be served.
Two inquiry committee reports will come to us soon. We will see if anyone is responsible for this or any negligence or sabotage has occurred. We will certainly punish according to law.
Eyewitnesses say there were multiple fires in different parts of the camp, leading some to speculate that the fire was intentionally set.
We saw a fire in Block C. It was a far away. Then I saw another fire in Block C and another in C18. So the fire was started from all sides of our camp.
How did the fire get here from far away? I do not understand it. We never thought our house would be on fire. The fire was far away, but suddenly I saw a fire burning behind us. Everything burned like this.
Rohingyas arrested several youths and handed them over to the police, who are interrogating them in connection with the fire. Nearly 500,000 Rohingyas are receiving humanitarian services in Cox's Bazar, which is a highly dense refugee camp with shanties covered in dry wood. The latest fire comes after a January blaze caused by gas cylinders that destroyed nearly 550 shanties. For Muazzam Hussein Shakil in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. Pope Francis has ordered cardinals to take a 10% pay cut and reduce the salaries of other clerics working in the Vatican in order to save jobs as the coronavirus pandemic has hit the Holy See's income. Emily Wither of Reuters reports.
Pope Francis is ordering cardinals at the Vatican to take a 10% pay cut and reducing the salaries of other clergy in an effort aimed at saving jobs there. The coronavirus pandemic is hitting the Vatican's income hard, and the Pope has often insisted that he does not want to lay off anyone. A spokesman said lower lay employees would not be affected by the cuts, such as ushers, cleaners, or firefighters. Cardinals who work at the Vatican and live there or in Rome are believed to get salaries of about 4,000 to 5,000 euros a month. Many live in large apartments at well below market rents. The pandemic has forced the Vatican museums, a traditional cash cow, to close for much of the last 15 months. And the Holy See, the central administrative body of the worldwide Catholic Church, may have to use 40 million euros in reserves for the second straight year. It expects a deficit of about 50 million euros this year. Programmed pay rises will also be suspended until March 2023.
That's Emily Wither of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. A team of international and Chinese scientists is supposed to report on its joint search for the origins of the coronavirus that sparked a pandemic after it was first detected in China over a year ago. Four theories have been considered, and one is the clear front-runner, that the virus first emerged in humans by way of a bat and then an intermediate host. A skyscraper-sized cargo ship wedged across Egypt's Suez Canal further imperiled global shipping Thursday as at least 150 other vessels idled waiting for the obstruction to clear, authorities said. The torch relay for the proposed Tokyo Olympics has begun its 121-day journey across Japan and is headed towards the opening ceremony in Tokyo on July 23rd. The first runner was 2011 Women's World Cup winning player Asuza Iwashimizu. The opening ceremony for the start of the relay was closed to the public but was televised live. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. A huge flood recovery operation is underway in eastern Australia as overflowing rivers continue to threaten homes. Two people have died and thousands of others forced from their homes. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Officials say two men were killed after being caught in floodwaters in the states of Queensland and New South Wales. Near Sydney, the body of a 25-year-old man from Pakistan was found inside a submerged car. Detective Inspector Chris Laird says the man called emergency services to say his vehicle was sinking before contact with him was lost.
A man that is possibly about to pass away and he's on the phone and the water's rising. Given what I've seen of the damage to the vehicle, it could very well be that the electrics totally failed and he was simply unable to escape from the car, which is an absolute tragedy.
The military is being brought in to help communities recover from some of the worst flooding Australia has seen in decades. Thousands of homes have been affected and many roads, bridges and rail lines damaged. The torrential rain has eased across New South Wales, although some thunderstorms were forecast Thursday, and the flood risk is expected to continue into the weekend. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
An American nurse held on murder charges in Nigeria has been released after her lawyers filed a petition over her deteriorating health. Kerri-Anne O'Rourke was arrested after a friend she met online died shortly after she visited him in Lagos and left for a return trip to the U.S. Police said she tried to flee the country. Her lawyer, Olu Adegboruwa, told me that she was in the country to set up a non-profit charity, but despite meeting her bail conditions, O'Rourke was held in custody for weeks without access to medical help.
System, because in Nigeria, under our own law, the Attorney General and Minister of Justice has the final say concerning prosecution of offenders and suspects. And so once the Minister of Justice has authored an opinion which exonerated Kerri and the other suspects, the police had no reason at all for holding on to her, because the police is not engaged in prosecution. They are only to investigate and turn the report of their investigation to the Attorney General. So to have held on to her after the opinion of the Attorney General is total impunity. It's a disregard for our legal system. And I think it speaks to the problems of the police generally, which was part of what led to the End-SARS protest in year 2020.
Reports said she was pressured to drop her case against the Inspector General of Police.
Yes, in the sense that the case filed by Kerri against the police asked for her release, and then also to interrogate the period of illegal detention and offer her compensation and an apology. When we served the police, I guess having read the case and seen the merit of Kerri's case, they decided to engage us to negotiate for her release, and they promised that they would release her. But of course, once she's been released, it was then not necessary to ask for an order for her release from the court.
As this case continues, is she supposed to stay in Nigeria or is she free to leave and return to the United States?
The negotiation we had with the police was that there were investigations were still ongoing. The police claims to be conducting a toxicology test the result of which is being awaited from the United States. So what we have engaged the police is to obey the law by giving regard to the rights of Kari, as the law in Nigeria presumes her to be innocent as a suspect. And so that presumption should entitle her to her liberty. It is until they find anything that connects her with the case before she will be invited. So what we negotiated with the police before her release is that Kari has collected her international passport and she's entitled to travel to the United States and go back home right away.
That's Olu Adeboruwa, attorney for Kerri-Ann Orook, speaking with me from Lagos. A year ago, India imposed one of the world's strictest lockdowns, resulting in an exodus of millions of domestic migrant workers from its crowded cities. In recent months, many have returned. Some are finding jobs in an economy that is slowly recovering from its worst fall in decades, but others are still struggling. Anjana Patricia has a report from New Delhi.
These migrant workers were among millions who trekked hundreds of kilometers to their village homes after Indian cities abruptly shuttered a year ago to stave off the COVID-19 pandemic. Others scrambled to get on to buses. The mass exodus of migrants stranded without jobs and money sparked a humanitarian crisis. Life in villages was not easy either.
I used to break stones from a small hill close by to sell to people building homes. That's how I managed to get by.
I tried to find something that would yield income
and sustain the family, but I could do nothing due to the lockdown.
But I couldn't do it because of the lockdown.
India's months-long shutdown led to mass unemployment in a country where rural migrants sustain the big city economy, working as drivers, construction labor, rickshaw pullers, or at street stalls, among other things. This vast, unorganized sector accounts for more than 90% of the country's livelihoods.
That's why it's only in India, out of the major economies, that you saw mass migration from urban to rural areas. You didn't see this mass migration taking place in the US or in UK or in China, etc., because they don't have such a large unorganized sector. And the unorganized sector doesn't have the kind of poverty that it is there in India. That's why India was particularly hard hit.
India's worst economic crisis brought more hardship than war, says Kumar. As cities reopen, many people have returned to search for livelihoods. But the pandemic has changed cities. Kamal Singh sold his cab. The new norm of working from home meant he got very few customers. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
With most votes counted, Israelis still do not know who won Tuesday's election. So far, neither Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu nor his main challenger Yair Lapid has a way to put together a majority coalition. That means there will be weeks of political horse trading and possibly another election. VOA's Linda Grandstein reports from Jerusalem.
It's going to take a while until Israelis know the final results of Tuesday's election, the fourth in 2 years. Yaron Dekel is a longtime journalist in Israel and has covered many elections.
We don't have a bottom line, unfortunately, because the counting still continues. And we'll probably have the final results by Friday morning or afternoon.
That's because there are more than 450,000 special ballots from Israeli soldiers, hospital patients, and diplomats overseas that have yet to be counted. And since Israel is such a small country, even a few thousand votes can swing a parliamentary seat. There are several possible scenarios once the vote counting is done, says Dekel. The first is that Netanyahu, with the help of several ultra-Orthodox and hardline parties like Yamina, headed by former Netanyahu aide Naftali Bennett, puts together a coalition.
That's VOA's Linda Grandstein. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.